This is the idea.
Yes.
What we're about to do is drop on you the Top 5 Things podcast. This is a review of what we got done on our morning show, which you can hear weekdays 5:30 to 10 on Planet 93.9. My name is Dave Lavora. This is my partner, Darren Pitra. And
that all checks out.
I'm not really giving any information that people don't already have.
Isn't
regular
already
listeners.
Public domain.
Right, but there has to be a beginning
somehow.
And an end to these things. So blah, 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 blah.
Number one.
Number one.
Number one.
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 Number one.
You hear William Shatner is saying that space was kind of a big letdown?
Yeah, it's just
weightlessness. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, there's nothing out there is what he's saying. It's everything that's going on is right here.
He says, my trip to space filled me with sadness. Overwhelming sadness. So, thanks for nothing, Bezos. Couple of quick space bits before we get into Shatner. NASA is saying that the thing that they shot into the asteroid did indeed change its path.
Okay.
The DART spacecraft.
But how much?
It was successful. Scientists have confirmed that the orbit of that space rock, known as Dimorphos, was indeed altered when our DART probe struck it head-on last month. Researchers came to that conclusion after making measurements using a range of space and Earth-based telescopes. The mission was conceived to test the potential strategy to defend planet Earth from threatening objects. And this is a success. It says here, Bill Nelson, the NASA administrator, says, this mission shows that NASA is trying to be ready for whatever the universe throws at us. I believe NASA has proven, he says, that we are serious as a defender of the planet.
Yeah.
That Artemis program that keeps getting pushed back.
Still pushed back.
Yeah, now they're saying the next Artemis 1, the uncrewed test flight around and beyond the moon. Now they're saying the earliest they'll get that off the ground is November 12th. The next window they're looking at here is between November 12th and November 27th. But yeah, the earliest this thing will be fired off will be November 12th. They're not in any hurry to get that thing up in the air, apparently.
Well, let's be safe.
Here's what Shatner is saying about going into outer space. Again, it was a big bummer. He says, so I went to space.
Kinda.
Our group, consisting of me, tech mogul Glenn DeVries, Blue Origin vice president and former NASA International Space Station flight engineer Audrey Powers. And if there was ever, if there was ever an astronaut name, Audrey Powers?
Pretty good.
That's great. And former NASA engineer Dr. Chris Bohusen. We had done various simulations and training courses to prepare. But you can only prepare so much, Shatner says here, for a trip out of Earth's atmosphere. As if sensing that feeling in our group, the ground crew kept reassuring us along the way. Everything's going to be fine.
Well,
don't worry about anything. It's all okay.
You remember, he was worried.
He was.
Talk me out of it.
He writes here, sure, easy for them to say,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah.
They get to stay here on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
Talk me out of it.
No. Shatner writes here, during our preparation, we had gone up 11 flights of the gantry to see what it would be like when the rocket was there. We were then escorted to a thick cement room with oxygen tanks. What's this room for, I asked.
Wait a minute, what's this all about? He was scratching and clawing the whole way.
This is so great.
No.
Shatner says they go into this room, thick cement room with oxygen tanks. What's this room for, I ask casually.
What's this?
Oh, you guys will rush in here if the rocket explodes, a Blue Origin fellow responded just as casually. Uh-huh. A safe room, 11 stories up, in case the rocket explodes. Well, at least they've thought of it.
Yeah.
Shatner writes here, quote, when the day finally arrived, I couldn't get the Hindenburg out of my head.
Oh, God.
Not enough to cancel, of course. I hold myself to be a professional, and I was booked.
Yeah.
The show had to go on.
Right.
We got ourselves situated inside the pod. you have to strap yourself in a specific order. Yeah. In the simulator, I didn't nail it every time. So as I sat there waiting to take off, the importance of navigating weightlessness to get back and strap into the seats correctly was at the forefront of my mind. That and the Hindenburg crash, she says.
Still.
Just can't stop thinking about it.
Oh, man. Just being just 100% honest.
Then there was a delay, Shatner writes. Sorry, folks. There's a slight anomaly in the engine. It'll be just a few moments. An anomaly in the engine? That sounds kind of serious, doesn't it? An anomaly is something that does not belong. What is currently in the engine that doesn't belong there? More importantly, why would they tell us that? There is a time for unvarnished honesty. I get that, but this wasn't it.
Oh, man, this is great.
Shatner says here, apparently...
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, the anomaly wasn't too concerning because 30 seconds later, we were cleared for launch.
Ah, you're fine.
Countdown began. With all the attending noise, fire, and fury, we lifted off. I could see Earth disappearing. As we ascended, I was at once aware of pressure, gravitational forces pulling at me. The Gs. There was an instrument that told us how many Gs we were experiencing. At 2 Gs, I tried to raise my arm, and I could barely do so. At 3 Gs, I felt my face being pushed down into my seat. I don't know how much more of this I can take, I thought. Will I pass out? Will my face melt into a pile of mush? How many Gs can my 90-year-old body handle?
Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
And then suddenly relief. No Gs. Weightlessness.
Jesus.
We were floating.
Weightlessness. Oh, Jesus.
We got out of our harnesses and began to float around.
No, you didn't.
The other folks went straight into somersaults and enjoying all the effects of weightlessness.
You hung on.
I wanted no part in that. I wanted, needed, to get to the window as quickly as possible to see what was out there. I looked down, and I could see the hole that our spaceship had punched in the thin blue-tinged layer of oxygen around Earth. It was as if there was a wake trailing behind where we had just been. And just as soon as I noticed it, it disappeared. I continued my self-guided tour and turned my head to face the other direction to stare into space. I love the mystery of the universe. I love all the questions that have come to us over thousands of years of exploration and hypotheses. Stars exploding years ago, their light traveling to us years later, black holes absorbing energy, satellites showing us entire galaxies and areas thought to be devoid of matter entirely. All of that has thrilled me for years. But when I looked in the opposite direction into space, there was no mystery, no majestic awe to behold. All I saw was death. I saw a cold, black, dark emptiness. It was unlike any blackness you can see or feel on Earth. It was deep, enveloping, all-encompassing. I turned back toward the light of home, and I could see the curvature of the Earth, the beige of the desert, the white of the clouds, and the blue of the sky. It was life, nurturing, sustaining life, Mother Earth, Gaia, and I was leaving her! Everything I had thought was wrong. Everything I expected to see was wrong. It was among the strongest feelings of grief I have ever encountered. The contrast between the vicious coldness of space and the warm nurturing of Earth below filled me with overwhelming sadness. Every day we're confronted with the knowledge of further destruction of Earth at our hands, the extinction of animal species, of flora, of fauna, things that look and took 5 billion years to evolve. And suddenly we'll never see them again because of the interference of mankind. It filled me with dread. My trip to space was supposed to be a celebration. Instead, it felt like a funeral.
Mm.
Shatner writes here, I learned later that I was not alone in this feeling. It's called the observer effect, and it is not uncommon among astronauts, including Yuri Gagarin, Michael Collins, Sally Ride, and others. Essentially, when someone travels to space and views Earth from orbit, a sense of the planet's fragility takes hold in an instinctive manner. The term was first coined by author Frank Wright in 1987. Quote, there are no borders or boundaries on our planet except those that we create in our minds or through human behaviors. All the ideas and concepts that divide us when we are on the surface begin to fade from orbit and the moon. The result is a shift in worldview and in identity. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, got a lot going on down there.
Huge bummer. Sent this old man into space.
Well, it's a good thing he didn't pay for it. It's a good thing it was a freebie. Because that sounds like buyer's remorse as well.
Right. Thought I'd be thrilled to go up there. And again, he says that trip to space just filled him with overwhelming sadness. Oldest living person to travel into space. And his review is, really bummed me out.
What a bummer.
Number two.
Conway, Arkansas. You familiar with Conway, Arkansas?
No.
I'll confess that I wasn't either. It's the eighth largest town in Arkansas and the birthplace of Gil Gerard, TV's Buck Rogers, also Scottie Pippen, and Simone, the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race season 13. For the longest time in Conway, Arkansas, they made school buses down there. That was like where a lot of school buses were manufactured. School bus plant moved out years ago to Tulsa, Oklahoma. They got some better incentives there. Conway, Arkansas is where a man is suing a country club. This is the Morrilton Country Club. Guy's name is Austin Claggett. Over the weekend, he played something that they called the Tournament of the Century. A three-person scramble format with a buy-in of $375.
Okay.
Now, before the tournament, this country club down there in Arkansas promoted that they had a 2022 Ford F-150 4x4 Super Crew. And that truck was the prize for the first person to hit a hole-in-one on the course's 10th hole. Sticker price on this truck is $53,595.
Okay.
It was donated by a nearby Ford dealership, J. Hodge Forge of Morrilton,
donated
Arkansas.
Meaning that if it doesn't happen, you give it back.
Right.
And we bought insurance in case someone doesn't.
Well, that's what you do. When you have a golf tournament, you take out insurance policies so that if somebody does hit a hole-in-one, you're not out that much dough.
No.
I mean, the odds of getting a hole-in-one are, I don't have to explain this to everybody, not that great, but not impossible.
Right.
Against all odds, this Austin Claggett goes out, and he does, in fact, ace the 10th hole.
I did it.
A good, clean ace. Didn't happen on a provisional, didn't happen out of turn. This was a one.
Legitimate hole-in-one.
A letter of the law, one. So after the round, he goes to get his truck.
Yeah, I'm going to drive this thing home. Not so fast.
And they say, oh, yeah, we can't really give you the keys. Sorry. Sorry, we can't.
What's the hang up here? What's the problem?
They don't want to give him the truck. And now
you can't.
I don't think they thought anyone was going to get the hole in one.
So they didn't buy the insurance.
Sure doesn't sound like it. And now there's a lawyer involved. The lawyer is one Andrew Norwood, who issued this statement on behalf of his client. Quote, "This is about doing what is right. Mr. Claggett lived up to his end on the deal when he got the hole-in-one, and now the Morrilton Country Club and J. Hodge Forge in Morrilton want a crawfish out of the deal. If they didn't want to pay up when Mr. Claggett got a hole-in-one, they shouldn't have offered the deal."
That seems fair.
Trying to crawfish out of the deal. That's like old-timey Southern lawyer talk right there.
I do declare.
"I may not know a lot about a lot, Your Honor, but this is a man who's been crawfished out of a pick-em-up truck."
A pick-em-up truck.
you take the handkerchief out of your shirt pocket and you just dot it on your forehead. Yeah. "Your Honor, my mama used to say, you don't crawfish a man out of a pick-up truck."
A pick-em-up truck.
Pick-em-up truck, sir. Jay Hodge Ford says they were unable to secure the necessary insurance for the vehicle in time, because it was their understanding that the vehicle was for display purposes only.
Okay, that is crawfishing.
Are you kidding me? No, we thought we were just putting the truck there so people could look at it.
Okay.
There's not a chance that's what you thought. Without their knowledge, Jay Hodgeford says, the country club promoted the pickup as a hole-in-one prize, perhaps thinking no one would actually make the hole-in-one.
Which is possible. I mean, you deal with, yeah.
It's more likely no hole-in-one is going to happen on 10, right? But it's not impossible, and it did happen. So, yeah, the Ford dealership is saying, we were just told they wanted a truck. Yeah. We did not know it was going to be offered up as a prize. We had no idea.
It is possible that they did that.
Did just someone at the country club say, hey, we'd love to have one of your trucks out here?
Yeah, make it happen.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if these people got $375 to play golf, they probably would spend $53,000 on a pickup truck. Sure, why not? So whether it's the dealership, I mean, the dealership is saying, this is all the country club. But this isn't us.
No, but they admitted that they didn't have time to get the insurance, so they were aware of it.
They must have been made aware too late. Like, the night before the tournament or something? Hey, by the way, we're offering that truck of yours up as a prize.
What?
You're what now?
You're what? Yeah.
This guy is going to get this pickup truck. There's no
question. Well, I'm sure they'll argue now that there's no proof it was a hole in one. We just, what proof do we have?
Well, people
saw it. It doesn't matter. They could be in on this.
All I'm saying is there's a lot of irregularities with the hole in one. That's what's next. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. This will be in court forever. Well, I wish this guy all the luck in the world. He should get the truck. Because
what proof do you have? We saw it with our own eyes. That's not good enough.
It was our understanding we were just putting the truck there for display purposes. Display purposes? What sense does that make? No, that was the prize. Oh, I wish we would have known that.
Will you sign an affidavit saying that you saw the hole in one? Yes. That's not good enough.
Yana, they're trying to crawfish out of this deal.
They don't want to give him that pick-em-up truck.
Pure and simple.
Number three.
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 Pair of Levi's jeans just sold for $76,000. $76,000. This was at an auction in New Mexico. Why are these jeans worth $76,000?
What gives?
They were found in an old mine, and they're from the 1880s. Digging down in a mine, found an old pair of jeans, put them up for auction, and they sold for $76,000. The buyer, a 23-year-old vintage clothing dealer, the guy's name is Kyle Halpert. The vintage jeans found in an old mine years ago and are still marked by candle wax. And,
Whoops, looks like I got some wax on my pants.
Kyle Halpert, the 23-year-old vintage clothing dealer from San Diego, bought the pants at auction. He says, quote, I'm still kind of bewildered, just surprised in myself for even purchasing them. I really shocked myself, Darren, when I bought these pants for $76,000.
Sounds like some buyer's remorse. Oh, that's an odd thing to do.
What the hell was I thinking?
I don't even know what I was thinking.
$76,000 for a pair of pants?
You think I can resell these things?
He tells the Wall Street Journal, quote, I'm still kind of bewildered, just surprised in myself for even purchasing them.
This is the weirdest thing I've ever done. I don't have that kind of money.
Halpert paid for 90% of the winning bid, the other 10% coming from Zip Stevenson, the owner of vintage clothing company Denim
Skip
Doctors.
Skip Stevenson?
Zip Stevenson.
Not Skip Stevenson.
No, he's no longer
real people.
He's no longer with us. Although you mentioned real people, did you see Byron Allen just bought a house for $100 million in Malibu?
Oh, my God.
$100 million.
What a waste of money.
Yeah, Skip Stevenson's rolling in his grave for a couple reasons this morning. Halpert paid 90% of the winning bid and is hoping that Zip, who's a little bit more experienced in the vintage clothing world, will be able to help him find the next buyer for the jeans.
Yeah, right away.
The total price, I said $76,000. When you factor in a buyer's premium, the actual total price for one pair of Levi's jeans, again from the 1880s, $87,400 for a pair of jeans. They look just like a pair of jeans that you'd buy today.
Yeah.
I mean, you could wear those.
Some sort of distressed jeans.
Right. I don't know that there's...
What's the waist on those things?
Oh, that's a good question.
People are smaller.
That's a good question. It doesn't look like there's any loops for the belt. So you would have used, what, suspenders for these, right? There's no belt loops. Other than that, it just looks like a pair of 501s. He posted a picture, this 24-year-old kid that's in way over his head on a single pair of pants. There's an Instagram post that just says, "These speak for themselves." Antique jeans were found in an old mine years ago. That's according to Long John, a magazine for denim enthusiasts. A denim magazine. Long John, the denim magazine, first broke news about the winning bid. They were used by a miner and feature suspender buttons on the waistbands and a single back pocket. The pants are marked by candle wax. I guess that makes sense. You're down in a mine in the 1880s. Candlelight would be the only thing you would have, right?
Mm-hmm.
The jeans are the oldest known Levi's from the Gold Rush era. And it says here they are the holy grail of vintage denim collecting. The pants are said to be in good wearable condition. It says here you could wear them to Starbucks if you wanted to. I don't know that you should be doing that, though. I don't think you should be drinking coffee in a pair of pants that cost almost $90,000 by the time you put in the buyer's premium. Do you get the candle wax taken out of the pants? Do you have these laundry?
Ah, no, you leave them alone.
Or is the candle wax part of the whole cachet of these things? I'm just really surprised in myself that I even bought these. Honestly, I don't know what I was thinking. I'm 23 years old.
I don't have.
Where am I going to come up with this kind of scratch?
I don't have anything close to that amount of money.
I was thinking me and Zip were going halvesies on it. Now Zip's telling me he's willing to pay 10%.
And Zip's now telling me that's not his real name.
Zip! Zip, buddy. I was really kind of counting on you to help me, help me out. Here's a Zip. Your picture of Zip in a pair of smart jeans with a denim shirt. What do they call that? The Canadian tuxedo?
No, that's the denim jumpsuit.
Zip Stevenson. Look, buddy, I told you I'd pay for 10% of these pants. I don't have. You think I got that kind of money? Look at me, walking around in a denim jumpsuit. Maybe our friends at Long John, the denim magazine, can help us find a buyer for these, because I don't...
Now I'm finding out that not only is Zip's not his first name, that's not his last name either. And he's gone missing.
Zip, it's all been lies, hasn't it?
Zip is a hologram.
Oh my gosh, I'm looking here at the Long John denim magazine page, and yeah, they are very into denim pants on this page.
That's different.
And it's a print magazine. Denim dudes.
Uh-oh.
Oh no. Here's the breaking news on Long John, the denim magazine website.
Oh boy.
With all the pictures of these pants. There's the Levi Strauss. Look at that. There's the Levi Strauss logo in the pocket. That's the same thing that's on my pants right now. Found years ago in a old mine. They thought it would sell for between $50,000 and $100,000, and there you go.
You got some Levi's on, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, look at you.
I think these are Levi's, right? Am I wrong? Yeah, I think so.
Mr. Fancy Pants.
Well, literally, yes. They were used by a miner. It says they were used as a minor pair, like most pairs from this era. Features your suspender buttons. They didn't add belt loops to Levi's jeans until the early 1920s.
Zip Stevenson is missing.
He was a hot... Zip Stevenson's because like some sort of Tyler Durden. We're going to find out it was just in his kid's head the whole time. Oh, no. You mean I made Zip up to talk me into buying these pants?
He said he'd go in half.
This story I'm reading from Long John, the denim magazine, written by Wouter Munichus. He says, I'm the founder of Long John, the denim magazine. Next to running this daily magazine, I'm working as a freelance denim specialist for the industry.
I don't know. It just seems to me like this magazine is a front for something else.
I was called
Long John?
He says, I was called a denim influencer in 2020 by the people at Rivet 50. How many different denim concerns are there? Rivet 50 are the most influential people in denim.
Now, did you say Rivet or
Rivet?
Rivet.
It's Rivet. Not frogs.
It's a frog magazine.
The most 50 influential people in denim. Boy, this is the list you want to be on if you're a denim enthusiast. What? Rivet, the global media authority serving the international denim industry, reveals the Rivet 50, an annual index of the most influential leaders in advancing the worldwide business of making and marketing denim. This year, the Rivet 50 was compiled by nominations and vote submitted by peers across the denim industry. More than 16,000 votes were cast online to determine the international honorees, culled from five categories: executives, designers, supply chain, mills, and agents of change. The 2021 Rivet 50 features diverse players in the denim business, spanning sustainable fashion designers, product developers, tech entrepreneurs, and philanthropic business leaders. Wow, it's the barometer for the denim industry, the Rivet 50. A representation of how far the sector's ongoing evolution has come in terms of innovation, sustainability, and creativity. This is another magazine, Rivet Magazine. It's just all about denim. And these people are thrilled to be on this list.
Everybody in the front office's name is Gene.
Number
four.
Guy tries to break into someone's house. This is in North Carolina. Tried to break into a home.
Mm-hmm.
And left behind some evidence that helped the cops in North Carolina apprehend Vernon Forrest Wilson.
What kind of evidence?
67 years old. Well,
you're breaking into people's houses at 67.
Yeah, he's a 67-year-old guy who tried to break into a home in North Carolina.
I like stuff.
And he was wearing a glove, you know, because you don't want to leave fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
But he had some sort of trouble in this attempted home invasion. This was a week ago today at 7 o'clock in the morning. Burlington, North Carolina, which is, it says here, about 60 miles northwest of Raleigh, North Carolina. The resident of the home had gone outside to start a vehicle in the driveway and was walking back inside when an armed stranger approached. The stranger tried to get into the house. There was a struggle at the door. The stranger's weapon was discharged at one point, and a bullet grazed the resident's chest. The resident was not seriously injured, but was able to shut the door. When he shut the door, it cut 67-year-old Vernon Forrest Wilson's finger off.
Oh, we got the fingerprints.
We've got the finger. Guy tries to break into a house and leaves his severed finger inside a glove at the crime scene.
You're not good at this at all. How about you break in when they're not there?
Resident was not seriously injured and was able to shut the door. Investigators later found a glove at the scene with a severed finger inside. They believe the glove belonged to the man who tried to break into the home.
I'm no
Sherlock Holmes, but I could have put that together. You think this finger with a severed glove has something to do with the crime?
Came off the glove of the guy who we just kicked out of the house?
Could be.
Could be.
Yeah, probably.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Police say Wilson's finger likely got severed when the resident forced the door shut on his hand. Shut the door so hard that it took
his... What a ninja move.
I know it. You got shot in the chest and
you took his finger off.
How about that? Wilson has been charged with assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, also inflicting serious injury. Bail set at $2,500.
What were you doing?
Also, doesn't have a finger anymore.
What were you thinking of?
Now he's Nine Finger Vernon.
What were you trying to get?
Yeah, there's a lot here to unpack. Just some, you know, is this somebody who was trying to get something specific? Or just, you know.
What do you got in there?
Yeah.
What's good today?
The owner told police he left the car in his driveway and was walking to his door when he was approached by the armed man. He was transported to the county jail.
What a nice move.
He also is charged with possession of a firearm by a prohibited felon. So, yeah, Vernon's got a lot to answer for.
Yeah, you're not supposed to have a gun, buddy. You know why.
Vernon.
Vernon?
I'm disappointed in you.
You don't get to have a gun anymore, Vernon.
Vernon?
Vernon?
And we're going to keep that finger. Do you think this finger has anything to do with the crime we're investigating?
I'm going
to
say yes.
Let's put it down as maybe.
I'm going to put it down as cha.
Five. Number five.
Roadside attractions.
I saw a guy hitchhiking the other day.
That's not a roadside attraction. That's a hitchhiker.
But he was hitchhiking in the city.
Like here? Like in Davenport? Where was this?
It was in Rock Island. It was like, yeah, he was hitchhiking. He wasn't out on the interstate or anything like that. It's just like, I'm here in town. It's like, if you could just maybe
drop. I'm looking for a ride to the mall.
I'm just trying to get to McDonald's.
In Alberta, Canada, there's a town called Cheadle, Alberta. And they have just unveiled a new roadside attraction. It's three massive fingers. It's like a hand coming out of the ground.
I know what you're going to say.
And it's holding a giant Cheeto.
Yes. With the Cheeto dust all over it.
And the Cheeto dust is on the fingers. Because it's Cheadle, Alberta. And Cheadle is what that dust on a Cheeto is called.
Oh, it is.
When it's on your fingers.
Okay.
Yeah. They say at any given time, there's like 40 or 50 people visiting this. And that's about half the population of Cheadle, Alberta, Canada. It's a 17-foot sculpture. The makers of Cheetos commissioned this sculpture. And it's just out there in a field. Just gray fingers coming out of the earth, holding a... It looks like a Cheeto puff, not an actual... Cheeto, right? It's like a cheese puff, the Cheetos puff version, not the Cheeto that looks like, you know, an asteroid or whatever those things are supposed to look like.
My nephew,
yeah,
who I should point out went on to play college football for 4 years.
Yeah.
When he was a little boy, he would put his hand in a sandwich bag before he put his hand in the Cheetos bag because he didn't want the Cheetle all over his tiny little hands.
Oh, wow. That's not bad.
Uh-huh. No, I'm not doing this. I'm not dealing with this. I need some sort of protective covering if I'm going to get into that Cheetos bag.
That's really smart, actually. Although...
I don't know if he set aside the sandwich bag.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where's my sandwich bag for the Cheetos at? Who touched my bag?
So you... Take the sandwich out of the bag. You eat the sandwich. Now you've got essentially a...
Well, I think he used
a pair of gloves to use.
I think he used a fresh bag.
Okay.
But, I mean, I guess it's possible that you could have done that. I guess if you took Cheetos to school and you had a sandwich, you could do that. You could eat the sandwich first and then put your hand inside the sandwich bag and then start eating the Cheetos.
I'm looking at the... Different roadside attractions here in town. There's Jake and Elwood Blues in Rock Island, which, by the way, was our idea and we never got any credit for. There's the giant Chief Blackhawk big metal sign.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to move it
to a bank.
They wanted to give it to Blackhawk Bank in Silvis. And then people in Rock Island said, no, you can't give that away. That's like our thing. What are you doing?
Is that what happened, or was it the bank thought, wait a minute,
it's not a, not
this,
the best
this
look
is
for...
not this is not gonna fit.
There's in Rock Island, there's also Rex the Loyal Grave Dog.
Don't know that one.
Yeah, this is in the Chipionic Cemetery. The story is that Rex sat on the grave of his young masters until he died himself, and now a statue of him continues the vigil. Mm. Two little kids in the family died of diphtheria on the same day, and the family dog went to the funeral, and he went to the cemetery every day and rested on the graves of his little companions every day for the rest of his life. And his owners were so grateful they made a statue of him on the graves of the kids to honor his faithfulness. Wow, that's heavy. Rex the Loyal Dog.
Still have the Ross's restaurant sign.
Does that really count as a roadside attraction?
Well, you can still get a meal there, too. You can stop and take a look at the sign and then go in and get something to eat. What's good today? What's fresh?
What do you got today that's fresh? There's the Atomic Cannon, which is on Arsenal Island. It was supposed to fire a nuclear warhead close enough to kill a nearby enemy, but far enough to spare the cannon crew. So that's something you can go and check out. The Atomic Cannon.
Got to be careful with that. You got to make sure your measurements are proper.
Oh, yeah. No, you don't want to rush that. It seems like something you want to make sure you're getting it right. You got to get that absolutely right. Is it Hampton? Where is it where they have the big guy on the old-timey bike?
Oh, no, that's in
that's not
Port
Hampton.
Byron.
Port Byron is where that is. And then he's got a brother, an identical brother, the 30-foot-tall old-fashioned bicyclists.
In a different city?
There's two of them.
And that's supposed to be a bike route?
Yeah, yeah. The
is it in
30
Minnesota?
Foot tall. No, it's in Sparta, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Yeah. Big Ben. It's a $60,000 statue funded and donated by Port Byron's former mayor, who hoped to start a yearly bike ride that would span the distance between Port Byron and Sparta, Wisconsin. That's something else. The big giant bicyclists. I don't see what other roadside attractions can you get to without going too far away. I mean, there's plenty of roadside attractions when you're far away from the Quad Cities, and more often than
not, you can only expect so many here.
Right. The whole point of a roadside attraction is you don't have anything else going on in your town.
Yeah,
we
don't want to turn this place into a junk drawer.
There was talk of them making a giant pushpin.
Pushpin.
Yeah, and the world's largest pushpin.
Is that what they were going to do before they built the Bridge to Nowhere, right?
It was around the same time. I want to say it was after the Bridge to Nowhere that they wanted to put right there on the river a massive pushpin, and it was going to go on the river. Even though we have absolutely no connection to pushpins here.
Well, except for, the pin marks the spot.
Right. The idea is what you're looking at is like a map, right? And you are here. And at the time, I thought it was an incredibly stupid idea. But the more I think about it, people would go and just get their pictures taken. They would have selfies taken on the river looking at that big, giant, stupid pin. It would
I
work.
Don't know that I've ever been on that bridge.
You've never been on the Bridge to Nowhere?
I don't think so.
It's actually pretty cool up there.
Yeah.
The giant fiberglass bull in front of the Mississippi Valley Fairgrounds. That's said to be a roadside attraction. People travel from far and wide to go see that giant fiberglass bull. And they've got the install the Palmer College put in that statue now where you can go right in front of the college and there's a statue of Daniel David Palmer, the guy who founded the college and came up with the whole idea of chiropractic care. There's a bronze statue of him now on the school grounds. And then there's a table So you can go and lay down on the table and it looks like he's cracking your back.
Ah, well, that's clever.
Yeah, that kind of is. There's the big Mother Goose at Mother Goose Land in Davenport.
That I've been in.
To do what?
I was a child. What do you think? I was hiding from the police.
I don't know. Honestly, that would make more sense to me than anything else.
I was on the run, hiding from the feds.
I didn't kill my wife! I don't care, Darren.
I don't care. Just get out of Mother Goose. I don't think I can. This was a lot bigger when I was little.
This is where I live now.
I live here now. Send my mail.
Well, if you're in Alberta and you're looking for something to do, this creepy Cheeto sculpture, I don't know. I think it's actually kind of cool.
I wonder if I'll ever get back to Alberta. Being that I've never been there.
Is it all over, Rock?
I guess so.
I didn't think it'd be like this.
There was Dave and Darren's Top 5 Things podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll have another one for you soon.
I think that's something we can probably live up to.
Here's hoping. It's been 8 years we've been doing these things. Until we get a chance to do it for you again, hang loose, kooks.
And you stay classy and safe, Quad Cities.
Come on, Quad Cities, represent. This is for the Quad Cities record spot, Davenport. Yeah, we keeping it locked, Rock Island. Come on, and it just don't stop, East Moline. Yeah, they keeping it hot.
Hey, Brian. Want to get the rock out of here?
Rock ya.
Bye, have a great time.
Oh, we are the boys of the chorus. We hope you like our show. We know you're rooting for us, but now we have to go.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.